From national news in D.C. to behind-the-scenes coverage of the Nebraska Capitol, this is your Capitol Connection. And now, bringing the Capitol to you, here's your host, Nate Groz.
And welcome to the program, Nebraska Family Alliance's weekly radio show here on 94.5 FM, 1420 AM, The Answer. And we're starting the show today with some recent developments that could have major implications for the city of Omaha. A new order has potentially cleared the way for a casino to be built in Omaha. Well, technically Carter Lake, but essentially Omaha's front door. So much so, in fact, that you would no longer even have to cross the river into Iowa to visit a casino. You would simply need to drive towards Epley Airfield, and it would be right there, right off Abbott Drive, in what is technically Carter Lake, Iowa, but has Nebraska land on both sides of it, could be a new location for a casino. And the issue here, of course, is that Nebraska doesn't permit casino gambling. Now, this has been this issue specifically with Carter Lake and building a casino has been going on. It's been a legal battle for over a decade. And what this situation revolves around is 5 acres of land that is owned by the Ponca Tribe of Nebraska in Carter Lake, Iowa, who want to build a casino. And in recent weeks, according to the Omaha World Herald, after a decade of lawsuits, appeals, and legal reviews, concluded with the National Indian Gaming Commission saying that the tribe can put a casino on 5 acres of land it owns in Carter Lake. Specific details and a timeline have yet to be worked out, but the tribe has indicated that it intends to develop a project similar to the one it proposed in 2007, which called for a casino with 2,000 slot machines and 50 table games. This would be a massive casino. And so now we're most certainly moving towards, again, more lawsuits, as both representatives from the Nebraska Attorney General's Office and the Iowa Attorney General's Office have said that they will be reviewing this decision and deciding if they will pursue any action and try and prevent this casino from being built. And this recent ruling from the National Indian Gaming Commission marks now the second time that they have said that this tribal land could be used for a casino. The commission first reached that decision 10 years ago in 2007, but was later overturned by a federal lawsuit filed by both Iowa, Nebraska, and the city of Council Bluffs. Now, in 2010, the 8th Circuit Court of Appeals reversed that decision and ordered the case to be reviewed a second time by the Gaming Commission. Now, here's where things really get interesting, outside of the fact that they're trying to build a casino on our side of the Missouri River on a piece of land that used to be on the opposite side of the river in Iowa, and after flooding is now on the Nebraska side, but still technically part of Iowa. The key dispute is that an attorney for the Ponca tribe agreed in 2003 not to develop a casino on the Carter Lake property. And in exchange, the Iowa officials agreed not to sue to stop the land from being placed into trust by the tribe. Now, in its latest review, the commission has said that that agreement is now invalid and they can go forward with building a casino. Now, this land that is owned by the Ponca Tribe of Nebraska was originally purchased in 1999 and had it taken into a trust in 2002 for the express purpose of building a health clinic. And as of today, there is no health clinic that was ever built on this land. So it would appear that the promise and supposed intention of the tribe to build a health clinic has, well, it's certainly never come to fruition, and it doesn't appear that that was ever really the intention, as now it appears it's all about building a casino, something they've been trying to do for many years and finally got a decision reversed from the National Indian Gaming Commission. So what does this all mean, that potentially there could be a casino coming quite literally right to the front door of Omaha. Practically Omaha, it's just this little sliver, tiny piece of land in Carter Lake that is technically Iowa and owned by the Ponca Tribe of Nebraska. And so they are using that to try and build a casino. Now, the entity with the biggest dog in this fight is actually the city of Council Bluffs with their casinos, who appear likely to fight the proposed casino in Carter Lake, according to the Council Bluffs city attorney, who has said they are likely to appeal this decision that they say would unfairly drop away players from the existing casinos in Council Bluffs, saying, quote, "We don't think the action of the Indian Gaming Commission is consistent with their rules and the way the land was originally put into trust," which, again, was for a health clinic. So this whole situation is going to continue to develop, and there will probably be a lot of appeals and challenges and more lawsuits, but it's essential for people to know that right now there is a path forward for building a huge casino, 2,000 slot machines in Carter Lake. It would be the first thing anyone would see driving to and from the airport, right at our city gate. And this is important because Nebraskans have continually and repeatedly rejected casino gambling, specifically as recently as last year when a ballot petition to create a constitutional amendment to permit casino gambling failed, and really failed spectacularly. They spent nearly a year and over $1 million collecting signatures to authorize casino gambling in Nebraska. They needed 117,000 signatures, and after spending a huge amount of time and money to get these signatures, county election officials accepted only 77,956,000 signatures after rejecting all the rest of the just over 119,000 that they collected. So they ended up being under 80,000, well short of the 117,000 necessary signatures for a proposed constitutional amendment. And this has consistently been the case. Nebraskans have not been open to the idea of having casinos in our communities, which is very sound, sensible policy. Nebraska has consistently ranked as one of the best places to live, work, and raise a family, and we've achieved that status without casinos in our backyard. And I've yet to ever hear proponents of casino gambling be able to point to somewhere in the United States where a casino has revitalized or greatly helped a community. And that's because we know that they don't. They take away the most from those who can least afford it, and the social costs far outweigh any extra tax revenue, which leaves the state. The state gets very little of what comes into the casino. And then what they do get quickly goes away to cover the new costs of all the increased social costs, such as increase in crime, more police, combating gambling addiction and compulsive gambling. And this is a belief that casinos would be bad for Nebraska that is shared not just by the majority of Nebraskans, but by the people ranging from Senator Ernie Chambers to Tom Osborne to Warren Buffett. And I've got a quote here from an economist and professor, Richard Florida, who said it this way: "Virtually every serious study that has ever been done of the economic impacts of casinos shows that their costs far exceed their benefits." So all of the promises about the great things that casinos will bring and what it could do for the Ponca tribe are false. Again, you know, what reservation would we look to and say that a casino has really transformed their communities? And what is so dangerous about casinos and gambling in general is that when it's sponsored and sanctioned by the state has then essentially partnered with the casino owners to try and take away from their citizens as much as they can, because the only way the state can win and the state can benefit is if the citizens lose. and they do lose. The consequences of gambling, and especially casino gambling, are quite serious. And a lot of people maybe don't take a great interest in the subject. They say, if you know you want to gamble, you can gamble. It's not a big deal. We've already got casinos in surrounding states. But building a casino in Omaha, anywhere in Nebraska, and now even Carter Lake, which virtually is Omaha, would have serious consequences. And this is an issue that Nebraska Family Alliance opposes. We are opposed to the expansion of gambling very simply because it's bad for businesses, and most importantly, it's bad for families. And last year, when the debate was raging on and there was the attempt to bring forward the ballot initiative to legalize casinos in Nebraska, Nebraska Family Alliance put together some very informative and important research, compiling some different studies and statistics on casinos to make people aware of five statistics that proponents of building casinos in Nebraska don't want you to know. And I'm going to go over these because nothing's changed. These are still real statistics that people should be aware of, especially as we learn more about the prospect of a casino potentially going up right in Carter Lake. And number one, for every dollar of gambling revenue, the state must spend $3 on increased social services. The costs of casinos outweigh the benefits 3-1. This is because casinos can't and don't really generate or create new wealth. They're just siphoning out money from the local community, and puts a drain on the local economy. And secondly, part of this 3-1 ratio, this increase in cost to the state, casinos create more gambling addicts than they do jobs. Not only do they create more gambling addicts than jobs, they can actually take away local jobs. This is from data from the New Hampshire Gambling Commission, as well as the Illinois Gambling Board, who conducted some studies when they were looking at building casinos. And what they found was that casinos not only take away the discretionary, but the non-discretionary spending of local residents, and consequently devastate the economies of their host communities by making that money unavailable to be spent in local businesses, leading to a decline in job growth. Third, casinos have been directly linked to as much as a 10% increase in crime within 3 years of opening, and that increase in crime continues to climb each subsequent year. The presence of a casino is largely associated with increased larceny, substance abuse, child neglect, domestic violence, and prostitution, which in many cases brings actual human trafficking with it. So it really comes as no surprise that Las Vegas, the gambling capital of the United States, is also the sex trafficking capital as well. The two go hand in hand, and we've seen this in other areas of the country as well. Casinos directly linked to an increase in crime. And fourth, they generate up to 50% of their revenue from problem gamblers. A 2013 report from the Council on Casinos found that casinos generate anywhere between 35 and 50% of their revenue from problem or addicted gamblers, which means they are thriving and profiting off of people's addictions. And slot machines have been referred to as the crack cocaine of gambling. It's the most highly addictive form of gambling, and they want to put 2,000 of those machines in this proposed casino for Carter Lake. And perhaps a bigger problem, the National Gambling Impact Study Commission found that the number of problem and addicted gamblers doubles when living within 50 miles of a casino. Fifth and lastly, if none of those other statistics grabbed you, I hope this one does. 5 years after casinos opened in Indiana, in a period of just over a year, 72 children were found abandoned on casino premises. Again, 5 years after casinos opened in Indiana, meaning it wasn't just a problem that existed right away when they first opened. This is looking 5 years after they had introduced casinos. In a period just over a year, 72 different children were found abandoned on casino premises. this is going to continue to be an ongoing debate as the situation unfolds. And so we just want people to be informed and have the actual facts on the implications and consequences of building casinos, because I think we all agree we can always find ways to improve our state. There's no question about it. But we should also consider if legalizing casinos is one of them. And due to the serious consequences of casinos, I don't think that they are. Nebraskans have kept casinos at bay for so long, continually pushing them back and keep them out of our communities. And so it seems it would really be unfortunate for someone to get away with sneaking a casino in through the back door, technically in Iowa, but on our side of the Missouri River, right at the door of Omaha, just off Abbott Drive. So we'll keep you updated as the situation continues to unfold. If you want more information on gambling and the policy implications of expanded gambling, you can visit NebraskaFamilyAlliance.org. Now, this past week also brought one of the most significant and historic First Amendment and free exercise cases before the United States Supreme Court, as last Tuesday, the United States Supreme Court justices heard oral arguments on the Masterpiece Cake Shop case. I spent a lot of time talking about this case, which centers around Colorado cake artist Jack Phillips and his desire to not be forced by the government to create a custom cake for a same-sex wedding against his deeply held religious beliefs. And this is a case that has implications for every American and for possibly an entire generation's understanding of the First Amendment and the liberties that it guarantees. And in a lengthy and at times charged oral argument in which debate time was extended, which is rare, the 9 Supreme Court justices really wrestled and grappled with how to hold these different views on marriage. And I think at the end of the day, one of the big takeaways is that tolerance is a two-way street. It's essential in our society. It's been a key principle that we can agree to disagree, and that the government can't compel or force your speech. It can't dictate what you have to say, what you must say, what events you must participate in, and ultimately that the Colorado Civil Rights Commission that initially ruled against the cake baker and said that he had to make this cake, that they were the ones who were intolerant of the cake baker's beliefs. And that was actually a point that was articulated very strongly by Justice Kennedy, who is viewed as the key swing vote in this case. This was during an exchange between Justice Kennedy and Colorado's Solicitor General, who was defending the Colorado Civil Rights Commission, and one of their members who compared the cake artist, Jack Phillips, to a racist and a Nazi. And Justice Kennedy was asking if that comment demonstrated anti-religious bias, and that if so, whether that judgment against the cake baker, the cake artist, should stand. And the Colorado Solicitor General said that, yes, it should still stand, and that led to this very strong quote from Justice Kennedy saying that tolerance is essential in a free society, and tolerance is most meaningful when it's mutual. It seems that the state in its position here has been neither tolerant nor respectful of Mr. Phillips' religious beliefs. In another key fact of this case, Justice Kennedy also pointed out that there were other cake shops that would have gladly accommodated the request for a wedding cake from the same-sex couple, and there was no need to force this specific cake baker to make that cake. And according to the Heritage Foundation, in a similar line of questioning, Justice Samuel Alito pointed out that the state of Colorado had failed to demonstrate mutual tolerance when it only protected the freedom of cake artists who landed on one side of gay marriage and not the other, namely the state side, and that they supported same-sex marriage. When other religious customers went to different bakeries in Colorado to request cakes that were not in agreement with that position, those cake artists declined and yet Colorado did not apply its anti-discrimination statute to punish those artists. They only applied it to the Christian cake artist, Jack Phillips, who had politely declined not to make that cake. So at the heart of this case is really compelled speech and protecting the free expression of artists and all Americans, Christian or not. And at one point, the Colorado Solicitor General, in his arguments, he said that cake artists could not discriminate on the basis of identity, but could discriminate on the basis of messages. And correctly, Justice Gorsuch later responded and pointed out that that's exactly what Jack Phillips, the Christian baker in this case, has argued. That's what he did. He was not discriminating based on someone's identity. He was declining a message. He was declining a specific event. It wasn't about the person. It was about the message. And so while now we patiently wait for a decision in this case, there's no doubt that this is one of the most important cases on the issue of religious freedom and free speech rights in years. And whatever the decision ends up being, it could have major ramifications for all Americans, and whether or not we're going to protect the free speech and religious freedom rights of all Americans, or if the state can forcibly coerce someone to act or speak against their conscience and their deeply held religious beliefs. And this is something that Michael Ferris, the president and CEO for Alliance Defending Freedom, the legal group who is representing Jack Phillips in this case, articulated on Tucker Carlson's show on Fox News following the oral arguments.
The artists that create cakes, the artists that create music, print, all sorts of artistic creations. Anybody who's in the free speech business would be affected if the ACLU's theory of the case is adopted. They contend that anybody who creates any kind of speech in the stream of commerce has no First Amendment rights whatsoever to not be coerced by the government. And that kind of coercion of speech is at the pinnacle of what the free speech clause has always been designed to protect against.
Well, wait a second. The ACLU's theory, I thought the ACLU was founded in order to protect the freedom of speech of the unpopular, by the way, of war resistors, right, in the First World War and Nazis and other people on the fringes. But they've given up on that charter?
They have indeed. I think they've lost their way. I didn't agree with the ACLU on many issues over the year, but I admired them for their consistency on free speech. But today they've turned their back on that. The agenda of advancing the gay marriage issue has, I think, blinded them to the free speech implications of their own position. Moreover, the court really focused, Justice Kennedy in particular, focused on the religious intolerance that was shown by one of the Colorado Civil Rights Commissioners. And Justice Kennedy engaged in the most heated exchange I've ever seen in the dozens of Supreme Court cases I've watched, and basically forced the Solicitor General of Colorado to disavow a statement by one of the commissioners who was very anti-religious in their comments. And I think that may really turn this case in an important direction.
That was Alliance Defending Freedom CEO Michael Ferris on Tucker Carlson talking about this case and how everyone's freedom is at risk when the government is able to punish citizens like Jack Phillips just because the government doesn't like how they exercise their individual artistic freedom. And at Nebraska Family Alliance, I know that we believe creative professionals, all creative professionals, should be free to create expression consistent with their faith and conscience without fear of government punishment. Tolerance, true tolerance, is a two-way street. And when it becomes, or if it is allowed to become, a zero-sum game where the government can destroy a person of faith for simply living and working consistent with their deeply held convictions and beliefs is wrong and dangerous for everyone. Nebraska Family Alliance is working to protect and advance the religious freedom and First Amendment rights of all Nebraskans. And if you would like more information on the issues or to learn how you can partner with and support the mission to advance family, freedom, and life, you can visit NebraskaFamilyAlliance.org. I'm your host, Nate Graz, hoping you'll join us next week. Thanks for listening to your Capital Connection.